Welcome to Enabled, the weekly program about people just like you who are dealing with issues of vision loss. The program is designed to encourage you through news you can use, inspirational stories, and interviews. I'm Nancy Zimmer, your host for Enabled. Thank you for joining me. If you studied Latin at any point in your life, you will know that triumvirate refers to three men in ancient Rome who held all the power. Julius Caesar was one of them. Well, today you'll hear a triumvirate of informative articles covering three very important topics: transportation solutions, and biomarkers for glaucoma, and summer camps for kids. The first article is sort of a continuation of last week's program when you heard all about the ride-sharing service of Uber. This article comes from Vision Aware, the American Foundation for the Blind, AFB.org. This is called "The Transportation Problem: Finding Rides When You Can't Drive as an Individual with Vision Loss." It was written by Audrey Demet. The transportation problem. One of the most difficult challenges for people with vision loss is finding reliable and affordable transportation. Whether you have had to give up your driver's license or never had the chance to drive, this is an adjustment fraught with emotion and a sense of loss of independence. In this mobile, fast-paced, car-loving society, who among us has not longed to get into a car and drive? The joy of running errands on your own schedule, or simply being able to spontaneously meet a friend for lunch. Those days are long gone for me. I lost my driver's license 24 years ago due to vision loss. It was a real game changer, to be sure. However, life can be lived even after this happens. Life without a license to drive calls for innovation, networking, and advocating for yourself, especially if you live in a community that does not offer public transportation. At the time I lost my license, we lived in the cornfields of rural Indiana. My husband and I quickly realized this location was not going to work for us. We had three young children to raise, and I had a career I wanted to pursue. So we relocated. We discovered Peachtree City, Georgia, which is in a rural county south of Atlanta. While it does not offer any forms of public transportation, it has 100 miles of golf cart paths and walking trails that connect the whole city. For years, I drove a golf cart to work, school, shopping, piano lessons, ball games, anywhere my busy life required. As my vision declined, my children were old enough to drive me, and we survived a few more years on the golf cart paths. Then my kids got their driver's licenses, and we bought a second car. They each took turns being my chauffeur. Before long, they all left for college, and I found myself looking for new transportation options. I got my first guide dog and began to walk to work and to the closest stores. But there are many places I cannot get to on foot, and there still are no buses in our town, so I had to get creative and assertive about finding rides. I rode to work for a while with a neighbor who worked at the same place. Then her job changed and she moved. I then recruited college students from a local campus and several other individuals as drivers for pay. We would discuss the price up front, which I based on mileage reimbursement plus an hourly wage. To find drivers or rides, I advertised my need for transportation in my neighborhood newsletter. Also, I contacted the local Lions Club to explore options with their volunteers. Often, I can get errands done with friends who do not accept payment, but I buy their lunch in return. When my children were young, I arranged carpools and rides for them in exchange for my babysitting services. It's important to plan your rides in advance, communicate clearly with your drivers, and organize your outings to make the most of the trip. Next, we have transportation tips and alternatives. Here are a few more tips to address the transportation dilemma. There are 9 helpful, handy tips. Number 1, some people keep their vehicle and hire a personal driver. You may want to advertise locally. You might not interview candidates carefully, do a background check, ask about their driving record, negotiate fees, and secure appropriate insurance coverage. This option involves other expenses such as car maintenance, registration and tags, insurance, and gas for your car. Tip number 2, if relocation is an option, Consider areas where there is public transportation, fixed route buses, paratransit, and public transit. Look up the walking score, the walk score, of areas that may interest you to find the walkability of that community. Consult a realtor about the rising number of live, work, play communities that offer the convenience of city life with less stress, decreased need for driving, and a healthier walking lifestyle. Tip number 3. Some communities offer a voucher transportation program. This would be offered through the Senior Services or Community Services Center. The programs are subsidized by federal and local agencies to provide transportation for seniors and disabled adults. The rider buys a book of vouchers at a low cost and exchanges them with a certified driver at the time of service. The driver then cashes in the vouchers for a subsidized amount. Tip number 4. Some local churches or community groups may have volunteer transportation programs that provide rides free of charge to qualified people. Tip number 5, local taxi companies may be willing to negotiate discounts for disabled passengers who frequently use their services. Then we come to what you heard about last week. There are ride-share services like Uber and Lyft. These are available nationally in selected cities. One is coming to Rochester, New York very, very soon. These services offer rides on demand within minutes in private vehicles, and they serve as taxi alternatives. They have mobile apps used to request the ride and handle the fees electronically. Uber just became available in my area, and I have had a very positive experience using the service and the accessible app. Tip number 7, the Independent Transportation Network. This is like a name brand. It's a registered trademark, ITN. It's a nonprofit system for older adults, age 60 plus, and people with visual impairments. It's a membership organization that provides rides to its members anywhere within the service area. No money changes hands in the car, and drivers do not accept tips. Drivers do offer a steadying arm, they carry packages, and they're able to fold walkers or chairs. It is a door-through-door service. Currently, ITN, the Independent Transportation Network, is available only in select areas. You can visit the ITN's website to learn more. The 8th idea for you, Rides in Sight. And that's spelled Rides in SIGHT. This group provides information about senior transportation options in local communities throughout the United States. Visit the Rides in Sight website, or you can call the toll-free hotline. Their phone number is 1-855-607-4337. That line's available Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Time. It's Rides in Sight. And next, a tip, good advice, I think, from the writer of this blog. Her name is Audrey Dimmitt. She said, number 9, expect to pay for rides and budget your life accordingly. If you owned a car and drove, you would have a myriad of expenses to maintain your own transportation. So her tip, expect to pay for rides. Next, she concludes the article by saying, accessible and affordable transportation is in short supply in many communities. Federal and local governments struggle to maintain programs and resources that meet the needs of low-income, senior, and disabled citizens. Shortfalls in funding have resulted in cutbacks in services and routes, and even the folding of paratransit programs in some communities. People need rides to maintain employment, good health, quality of life, and engagement in the community. It's imperative for the visually impaired community to be proactive in managing their transportation needs. Lack of transportation can lead to isolation, unemployment, loss of independence, and even depression. We must take charge, self-advocate, and be creative when it comes to addressing this area of our lives. Next, we have an article from the Gleams magazine. It's the first article in their spring, their May 2017 edition. It's called Catalyst for a Cure Biomarker Initiative. This is a game changer in the fight to protect vision. This was published by the Glaucoma Research Foundation. The article starts, key to help helping prevent irrevocable vision loss from glaucoma is early detection combined with effective treatment. But to date, mechanisms to evaluate the progression of glaucoma have been limited. Now, investigators with the Catalyst for a Cure, this is a group that's sponsored by the Glaucoma Research Foundation, Catalyst for a Cure, the CFC, this is the biomarker initiative. These investigators are on the verge of upending this barrier through the identification of new biological markers for glaucoma. Biomarkers can provide physicians with better tools to diagnose and manage glaucoma before vision is lost, as well as accelerate the pace of discovery toward better treatments and ultimately maybe a cure for glaucoma. Unique collaborative approach. Setting the agenda for Glaucoma Research Foundation established the CFC, Catalyst for a Cure, Biomarker Initiative in 2012. This consortium builds on the success of the first CFC initiative and harnesses the abilities of four investigators. A PhD, Alfredo Dubra, an MD and a PhD, Jeffrey L. Goldberg, a PhD, Andrew G. Huberman, and a PhD, Vivek Srinivasan. All these people were tasked with finding biomarkers for glaucoma. These four researchers working in laboratories at prestigious academic centers bring expertise in disciplines ranging from biomedical imaging, physics, retinal cell biology, and neurobiology to clinical ophthalmology. One of the researchers, Dr. Goldberg, explains, the principle is team science, with the intent of discovering fundamental biology, implementing it in innovative engineering, and pushing it from the laboratory into the clinic. The next part of the article is a critical tipping point. Thanks to the CFC Biomarkers Initiative, identification of molecular biomarkers for glaucoma has greatly accelerated. The CFC investigators have made extraordinary progress in speeding the progress of investigation, and they are now at a critical tipping point, motivated by the hypothesis that structural and/or metabolic changes in the retina will allow eye doctors to detect and monitor glaucoma and evaluate treatment efficacy. The researchers focus their attention on the retinal ganglion cells, the RGCs. The retinal ganglion cells. The health and evaluation of these RGCs are fundamental to glaucoma because as RGCs degenerate and die, vision is lost. Through their investigations, the researchers identified which types of retinal ganglion cells are injured or die first in glaucoma. Then the team developed state-of-the-art imaging equipment to non-invasively measure structural and biological changes in those retinal ganglion cells. With the aid of the diagnostic tools they created, these researchers have identified biomarkers that may be among the earliest to show changes in glaucoma. The CFC team now has 8 potential new biomarkers, and they are focusing on 3 of the most promising. The first one is mitochondrial structure and metabolism. Mitochondria that are damaged or not working correctly can result in the damage and eventual death of the retinal ganglion cells. By observing and measuring changes to the mitochondria, it may be possible to help ensure the health of the retinal ganglion cells before vision is lost. The next most promising idea, retinal oxygen metabolism. Changes in oxygen saturation can be harmful to the eye and may play a role in glaucoma. Specialized equipment developed by the team can be used in the clinic to measure changes in oxygen saturation in order to diagnose and monitor glaucoma more effectively. And the third most promising biomarker development, imaging of the inner retina. Being able to view early changes in the retina's vascular, nerve fiber, and ganglion cell components could allow doctors to step in before the nerve cells are damaged. Based on the investigators' findings, the implications for treatment are profound. In addition to allowing doctors to intervene before the nerve cells are damaged, biomarkers can lead to faster drug discovery by quickly demonstrating efficacy, and they hold promise of helping eye doctors to provide personalized treatment specific to each patient's diagnosis. Functional tests for these new biomarkers have been validated in models of glaucoma and now are being tested in patients. A quote, "The researchers' ability to bridge from laboratory studies to human studies and then take that into the clinic is what we set out to do 6 years ago," said Dr. Huberman. So on the horizon we have, the consortium is now focused on a bold new goal, a pathway toward a therapeutic strategy for restoring lost vision in glaucoma patients. The article ends with a quote from Dr. Huberman, who, by the way, is a PhD, and he's associate professor in the Department of Neurobiology at Stanford. He says, "Two clinical trials are underway for vision restoration. These trials would not be possible without the identification of the new biomarkers and the new imaging equipment that the team has built." So the next article, now we have some camp information. It's coming up on summer. This is from a website called mentalfloss.com. The headline reads, "Inside the Space Camp, Designed for Blind and Visually Impaired Kids." This was written by Jennifer Billick. 17-year-old William Hedlund's favorite part of NASA's space camp is the simulators. From the 1/6 gravity chair to the mock flights and missions, he loves the in-depth experience, a taste of what it's like for actual astronauts in training or in space. He's your typical teenager dreaming of space travel, except for one thing. He's blind. Hedlund, who is from Seattle, is one of 750,000 people who have gotten a taste of astronaut training since Space Camp, held at the U.S. Space and Rocket Center in Huntsville, Alabama, was launched in 1982. It's a famous program. There was even a movie about it. But few know about the tailored camp that Hedlund has attended for the past 3 years. It's called Space Camp for Interested Visually Impaired Students. It's abbreviated with initials SCIVIS, and I'm guessing that it's pronounced SciViz. Space Camp for Interested for Visually Impaired Students. This is a program for kids in anywhere from the 4th to the 12th grade. A quote, "I don't have the chance to connect with many visually impaired people of my age, so it's great to be there and make that connection," Hedlund tells Mental Floss. "We exchange techniques about how to get around our visual impairments and enjoy the camaraderie with each other." During the week-long program, participants stay in the Space Camp's dorm facilities, which are set up to look like futuristic space stations with tubular compartments and tunnels attached to a main silo, silver concave doors leading to the dorm rooms that have colorful bunk beds, and a cafeteria. They spend their time on simulators, completing astronaut training missions and conquering physical challenges like climbing a rock wall and scuba diving. There's a graduation ceremony, too. In the 27 years of SciViz, more than 3,800 students from almost every state and more than 20 countries have attended. About 50 kids each year get scholarships that cover up to half of the program's cost. This would be $800 or $900 for Advanced Academy high schoolers. And an estimated $500,000 has been awarded through the life of the program. The last 4 years have hit about $70,000 in scholarship funding through supporters, including Delta Gamma, Northrop Grumman, the Tubert Charitable Trust, and Lighthouse for the Blind St. Louis. Prior to that, it was only between $4,000 and $10,000 a year. Students come from all over the world, each with a chaperone, which has to be a professional educator from their home school or district, specializing in education for the blind and visually impaired. This chaperone acts as a technical assistant for the staff. One of those specialized educators is Dana LaCurran, an orientation and mobility specialist with the San Luis Obispo County Office of Education. LaCurran brought two visually impaired students, a senior and a seventh grader, to SciViz in September of 2016. The senior, who was blind, told LaCurran that her favorite experience was scuba diving. She had never felt weightlessness before. The program tries to stick to the same camp experience non-disabled students have, including everything from the camp instructors to the manuals they use. The staff doesn't get any special training, nor does Space Camp bring in a special team for the week. The instructors do, however, attend a pre-camp workshop or two on blind etiquette, LeCurran tells Mental Floss. The pre-camp workshops are a way to avoid moments of panic. A quote, sometimes people are like, oh my God, I just asked a blind student if they could see something. And we tell them it's okay to use that word, LeCurran says, and to share some tips on working with visually impaired students in general. The chaperones with each student generally intervene only if needed, but the kids do get some equipment and materials that are tailored to their abilities. According to program coordinator Dan Oates, all the materials for the week are available in Braille, large print, or electronic magnification, and the overall schedule is tweaked to allow more time for training. Before camp activities start, the students are screened to ensure the simulators won't aggravate their eye condition. Once camp is underway, the mission control room has screen enlargement software and synthesized speech available, as well as Braille keypads and special headphones that process two audio signals. During the camp, blind or visually impaired NASA employees come to speak with the students. Hedlund says that meeting NASA professionals with his disability was one of the most powerful parts of his experience. He said it opens doors to the possible career paths we can take, besides just a typical job, he said. It shows it is possible for visually impaired students to achieve their dreams. Working at NASA becomes a really achievable goal. Every challenge the students face focuses on empowering them, introducing important skills in addition to space-themed activities. The rock wall, for example, encourages the use of spatial concepts not often used by kids with visual disabilities. A quote, once they leave the ground, to them, they could be 5 inches or 50 feet up, LeCurran, the chaperone, says. They have no concept of height, yet they tackle these things like there's nothing to it. It's really hard for them to get spatial concepts, but in the climbing wall, they have to learn. You can't tell them to move their hands an inch to reach a handhold because they don't know what an inch is. They can't see rulers. They're learning skills that a visual student would not have to learn. A main theme is allowing the kids to complete the activities on their own. Students are paired up so they can play off one another's strengths. For example, a blind student will be paired with one who can read large print. They work together with the aid of the staff and chaperones only if needed. A quote from the chaperone, so many times they are told that they have to rely on someone else to help them. Here, they help each other. We don't guide them. They are capable. A lot of them find that a very interesting and new experience because they're used to people doing everything for them. And now they get to do everything for themselves. The article finishes with a quote, blind and visually impaired students, this is a quote from the coordinator, the director of the program, blind and visually impaired students, for the most part, rarely get the chance to socialize with their peers. They may attend school daily, but are often on the fringe and not part of a social group or team. There is great power in like-minded individuals gathering for a common cause. This is a quote from Dan Oates, O-A-T-E-S, who is the coordinator of SciViz, S-C-I-V-I-S, a program sponsored by NASA. You can contact him by email, S-C-I-V-I-S, at atlanticbb.net. The next articles I have are about some local camps that are offered here in Rochester, New York. There are two of them that I'll try to get to. The first one is called Camp Abilities. This is held at SUNY Brockport, which is right outside of Rochester, New York. This year, the program runs from June 25th till July 1st. You had better hurry if you want to find out about this. Camp Abilities Brockport is a one-week educational sports camp for children and teens who are blind, visually impaired, and deafblind. It's set up to provide a one-on-one instructional situation for each person. They have trained, in addition to helping blind kids, they've also trained more than 1,000 future teachers in the area of sports and recreation for children with sensory impairments. Many of our specialists are blind themselves and serve as excellent role models for the children. So to contact Camp Abilities, held at SUNY Brockport, coming up very soon, the area code is 585-395-5361. And they do have a website, www.campabilitiesbrockport.org. This Camp Abilities model has expanded to other locations, other states, even other countries. So check to see if there's a Camp Ability located in your area. Next, in the Rochester area, we have CampSmile.org. This is held in Webster, New York, right near Rochester. Campers can choose to come 1, 2, 3, or 4 weeks. This is totally free. Each theme will engage, educate, and entertain through hands-on activities provided in a safe, caring environment where campers feel free to explore. These weekly themes chase away school year doldrums by helping campers test the boundaries of their knowledge, discovering fascinating facts and new areas of interest, while at the same time realizing their learning potential and also making lifelong friends. Camp Smile is a New York certified summer day camp for children who are blind or visually challenged. The project is sponsored and financially underwritten by the Webster Lions Club, District 20-E1. The camp annually hosts an average of 50 children from the age of 5 to 21, and it is certified by the New York State Department of Health. This camp was conceived, the idea was conceived in 1972. The first camp was opened that summer. There is a director and assistant director that oversees every aspect of the operation of the camp. They hire volunteer teenage counselors. These directors set up activity schedules, and they correspond freely with parents and coordinate filing of medical histories and family records, which are required to accompany each camper and counselor. The purpose, as we said, is to provide real-life opportunities not otherwise available to kids who are blind. The ultimate goal is to encourage each child to be independent, to experiment, to feel and sense things that for many of them occur for the first time at this camp. This year, the camp will run from July 11th to August 5th, from 9 to 3 each day. Campers may attend 1, 2, or 3 weeks. Transportation and lunch is provided. There is no cost to attend. Sponsored by the Webster, New York Lions Club, held at the Kiwanis Club Lodge on Shangri-La Lane in Webster. The contact number, 585-203-5000. That is for Camp Smile, held in Webster, New York. Well, here's a good thought to end this program. It comes from an alumni of that NASA Space Camp program that you heard about earlier in this program. The students said, "Just because I can't see the stars doesn't mean that I can't reach for them." So thank you for listening, and I hope you have a great week. You've been listening to Enabled, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. Our technical director is Maureen Rich, and I'm Nancy Zimmer. I hope you'll join me again next week for more updates and information and encouraging stories. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can listen to it at our website, wxxi.org.